Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
What's up, guys? Welcome to the first ever episode 210 of the Kinda Funny Games Cast. As always, I'm Tim Geddes, joined by one of the coolest dudes in video games, Greg Miller.
Konnichiwa.
The busiest lady in the biz, Andrea Renee.
What's good, Tim?
And the hair, Frantham himself.
Fran, the third.
Hey, best friends.
Oh, man. What an exciting time to be alive. Ladies and gentlemen, this is the Kinda Funny Games Cast each and every week right here on youtube.com/kindafunnygames. We get together, talk about video games, all the things that we love about them. You can get the show early by going to patreon.com/kindafunnygames. And at the bronze level, you get to write in, be part of the show. At the silver level, you get the show early, you get the show ad free. It's fantastic. I recommend it for everyone in the world.
Wow.
To do that. Yeah.
Everyone
in the world.
But if you don't want to do that, that's cool. You can get the show for free later on youtube.com/kindafunnygames or on roosterteeth.com now and on podcast services. Where, Greg?
Around the globe.
Exactly.
Fran, can I come to you with a request from the best friends? This is making its way around the subreddit last week, I believe.
Okay.
Somebody wanted, for old time's sakes, you to say, I think, what's up, Guardians, or whatever you used to say when you talk to them. Yeah.
Oh, no, I just say at the beginning. So it's funny, I do the same thing here when I'm saying, hey, best friends. Kevin, how dare you interrupt this sweet, sweet moment of... anyway, so I normally say, hey, best friends. And I took that from Fireteam Chat, where in the beginning, they go around the table, same thing. And I'm like, hey, Guardians. And so that's
good
that.
Job.
So we
good
do
job.
Hey, Guardians in the end of the show. And then maybe that's until next time. Guardians out. So,
nerds.
Famous story. I came up with that. Like, everything when we do shows like this, it was totally on the fly. And at the end of the show, I just said it. And I looked at Destin or something, and we were like... No, I think it was Jose, and he hated it.
Yeah.
No, I hate it. But anyway,
wow.
I know.
I've never heard your Jose impression.
I've never done one.
If I close my eyes, I totally see Jose as a Muppet.
No.
I love Jose.
But anyway, I love Jose.
And then it stuck.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's great.
So maybe we'll just... Do you guys have an outro for this? Not really. Do we?
I do.
He says, until next time, I love you.
Oh, that's it.
That's what
I
do.
And I say, until next time, it's been our pleasure to serve you.
It's been our pleasure to serve you. That's right.
Yeah. Yeah. It's fantastic. Anyways, shout out to our Patreon producers, of which there have been so many this month. Thank you very much. Joe Beezer, Trevor Starkey, Muhammad,
Blackjack,
Steven Johnson, Scott Hardinger, Fanatic Gamer, 1986, Drunk on Writing, DJ Kento, Neil Mariquin, Sancho West, James Gastings, Ben Fraley, Eduardo Cabrera Lechuga, Michael Howard, Snowbike Mike, Daniel Haynes, Cassie Kern, and Matthias Forsheim. Thank you all for making this show happen and for making the world tour happen. You can go to kindafunny.com/events to check out all of the meet and greet stops we have upcoming. You guys were at the San Francisco one. That was a lot of fun this weekend. But yeah, coming up, we got Kansas City, we got New York, we got Vancouver, we got London at some point.
Kindafunny.com/events.
Is the next one Kansas City?
That is correct.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
End of March.
Yeah. You want to come?
Thinking about that barbecue and, of course, the meetup. But
here's what I'm thinking. You know, I'm thinking Arby's. I got to say it. Sorry. Anytime that statement happens.
Oh, my God.
But what I'm really thinking is we do the meet and greet on Saturday. We're doing the Comic-Con stuff. We're hanging out. Sunday morning, Fran, you and me, we wake up at 6 a.m., we get in the rental car, we drive to Columbia, Missouri, we have some CJ's Hot Wings for lunch.
Oh, my God.
And we drive on back, we fly to Kansas City. That's the plan. Get in the car.
6 a.m. call after, like, being out lit, just for the wings.
Well, it's not sleep.
Oh, just, yeah. See, that's a bet. I would prefer that. What's the earliest they open?
Oh, I think like 11.
Okay.
It's a 2-hour drive.
We don't need to leave. It's also the Midwest. A lot of things don't open early on Sunday.
I love that.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Oh, I love it so much. Let's talk about video games, Greg Miller.
Okay,
you know what I got to play?
What's that?
Yoshi's Crafted World.
Oh.
There's a demo out now. I did not play the demo. I played a preview event demo that we did. I got to go to Nintendo, hang out with Mr. Nintendo himself. I played Kirby's Extra Epic Yarn and Yoshi's Crafted World. Epic Yarn, it's the same game you played on the Wii all those many moons ago, 2010. It's being re-released on the 3DS. It's one of the 3DS's swan songs.
Yeah.
Is it worth playing? If you have a little kid, sure. if you don't have a little kid? I would say no.
Yeah, I think I heard that back then as well. I never got to
and it was true back then. Yeah. I beat it back then on the Wii, and I was like, you know what? Kirby games, not necessarily for me. I liked the art style of Epic Yarn. Yes. That still stands up.
That's cool.
But it on the 3DS screen, I don't think the 3D adds anything to it.
Yeah.
And the 3DS screen's never impressive.
I played it at E3 now, I remember, right? Like, I thought it got announced and came out pretty quickly, but...
On the Wii?
Yeah.
Yeah, back on the Wii it was. Yeah, yes. It was a quick turnaround.
Not 3DS, on the 3DS.
It's still
just
not out. Yeah.
Just happening, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But anyway, they added a hard mode. It's not hard. Okay. It's like, it's weird. It's very, very shooting. You can tell they're at the end of the 3DS's life where they're just like, what quick, easy ports can we just get on there to like sell software? Because there's so many hardware units out there. But yeah, it's like they added this hard mode where you're essentially getting chased through the level by this like evil Kirby guy. And it's like very easy to, it doesn't feel like it was designed with the level design in mind. It was just kind of like, well, here's an extra challenge. Yeah, it's just one more thing you have to face against. And that wasn't that great. But then there was Yoshi's Crafted World, which is kind of the modern take on the same idea. Mm. I've always enjoyed the Yoshi games more than the Kirby games. Yoshi's Island, one of my favorite games of all time.
Oh, yeah.
This, nowhere close to that game. We're never going to get a Yoshi's game like that ever again. We got Yoshi's Story after that. And then we got, you know, the new Yoshi's Island. And then... most recently Yoshi's Woolly World and all of that. This is definitely the sequel to that. I feel like it is a big enough step up from Woolly World where it does feel like the Switch version of it, where it's like, I feel like a lot of Nintendo franchises on their first outing on the Switch have been the kind of like big coming out party where it's just like, hey, everyone has a Switch now, even if you didn't have a Wii U. So they're playing games that they haven't played before. I think Woolly World's a good example where it's like, we all saw it, but like how many of you guys played it?
Yeah, no, I think the amiibo got sent to us. We had him floating around.
He's still hanging around. He's somewhere here.
Yeah, that's how I felt about Captain Toad. Mm-hmm. I didn't really play that on Wii U or 3DS. Did it come out on Wii U?
It came on Switch.
It came out on 3DS at the same time that it came out on Switch.
Okay.
It's a Wii U game. Yeah.
Yeah, so it is a Wii U game.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I never played it on the Wii U days, and then I tried it on Switch, and it's great.
Yep, and it's, I think, a very similar story. It's not the same as Captain Toad, where Captain Toad, I feel like, is... an amazing game, regardless of having to be like, oh, if this, it's like, no, it's just great. Yoshi's definitely like, if you're into platformers, it's fine. It is very, very simple. I only got to play a couple levels, but there was no challenge whatsoever, which you kind of come to expect from these games. I wish that wasn't the case.
Yeah, I was going to say, then what's the appeal?
The appeal is the visuals. The appeal is the world that they're building.
And they're entry level for younger players.
Sure, yep. I know that.
And so there's that thing. And it's like, this is going to be great for them. Not great for me, though.
Yeah, but like, I feel like as much as we've grown up and evolved and gotten better how to deal with these games, they're original, you know, all the, you know, Mario and everything. They were always challenging when they needed to be or they could be, depending on what you're trying to get. So if it is lacking in that, I actually would challenge that.
Like, and I'm with you.
Feels like they didn't spend enough time, you know.
I think that the, like, devil's advocate to that point is that they've found that there's enough different niches where it's not just, oh, there's old platformers have to be challenging and appealing to everyone.
Sure.
It's like, okay, there can be ones that are even simpler. It's kind of like Legos, right? It's like Legos can be as complicated as necessary, but there's still the Duplo blocks for the little kids. You know
and
what
I
mean?
And I feel like the woolly look, right? And like that crafted look maybe is like we're always talking with Mario. There being so many different kinds of Mario, different versions, whether it's fully 3D or, you know, 2.5, that kind of signifies that's what you're going to get, right? Because I feel like that's how they've always been.
Yeah, but games. Like that's kind of what is upsetting to me as somebody that like actually really loves, I can't say the Yoshi franchise because that's not true. I love Yoshi's Island. And Yoshi's Island was the one that introduced the hand-drawn art book, like storybook look.
Yes.
And like that was revolutionary back then because that was still in the days where every Mario game looked different. You know, like Mario 1 had its look and then Mario 3 was like the stage play. Then Mario World was like very vibrant, perfect. Lots of colors. And then we got to Yoshi's Island, which was a storybook come to life. And then Yoshi's Story kind of evolved that into a different way. And I feel like ever since then, it's just been getting more and more like it's just about the look and the gameplay doesn't like that match sucks. Up to it. It's just kind of just hold right. And
yeah, it just feels one note really the way you describe it.
Yeah, it is very one note. And you just have to kind of solve these puzzles that are little kid puzzles and little kids are going to have fun with them. But, you know, I just feel like games, especially Nintendo games, should have more depth than that.
See, that's what I'm saying.
It's interesting you both say that. I hate to do this to you, of course, but I host another show called Kind of Funny Games Daily. And today, BJ Bumgardner wrote in to patreon.com/kindoffunnygames, just like you can at the bronze tier, and said, I played the demo for Yoshi's Crafted World yesterday. The game is pretty, and I see the appeal. However, it, like last year's Kirby Star Allies, appears to be mind-numbingly easy. If only there was a carrot at the end of the stick. If I knew other... That's what he says. Would be able to see that I 100% the game, I would be more willing to buy/play it. Wouldn't Nintendo be smart to develop a trophy system?
No, that's... I think that that's entirely just like promoting bad behavior from the developers for if that's the reason that they would be doing that.
Sure.
Right. I do think that that this game, the what it's offering people... It's different than Kirby Star Allies because Kirby Star Allies, I think, is really focused on the get the whole family involved. And whether you're the mom that plays games all the time, introducing the dad that doesn't and he can play, and then also the little kids playing and all of them as a family playing four player together, like that's the basis of that. Whereas this, I feel like it is the look. So it is for whoever's sitting next to you to look at it and be like, oh, that's cute or that's a cool idea. Like they really go hard into the crafted, the arts and crafts world that they build.
I bought Kirby's Epic Yarn. Yeah, and played that. And it was this thing of like, oh man, this art style is so cool that I want to go through it. But I remember being like, all right, cool, we're just going through this.
This one feels different, like what I was saying about it being the Switch version. Like I feel like their focus is the look of the world more so than anything else. Whereas before it's like, okay, we're just taking a 2D platformer and now you're a yarn character. That's just the design of the character. I feel that with this, it's like their whole thing is creative uses of elements. So it's like soda cans will be like towers you need to go up, or like the way that the clouds are, like it's like pieces of paper that have like strings attached to them. But like this plays with it in a different way because it's kind of like Super Paper Mario where you can flip the perspective of it.
Oh.
So, but every level has what they call a flip side level. So you play through the whole thing to get to the goal, typical 2D platformer, but then it like flips and you go behind the whole thing. Okay. And that changes the perspective of where all the arts and crafts are. And because they're arts and crafts, it's not just like there's nothing happening on the back. It's like there'll be different strings that you saw hanging over. And those are a bit more challenging than doing it the first time.
So you have to go back to solve some of these puzzles. And so that's the hook. I was wondering, I was like, well, what's the hook other than this sort of visual style?
That is the hook. And you can tell they're doubling down on that. Like this game, I feel, does a better job than Yoshi's Woolly World or Kirby's Epic Yarn in making the world feel very unique and something we've never seen before. Mm-hmm. But the gameplay is... Hold right and jump. Gotcha. You know what I mean? Like without any real fear of anything.
But you got to solve what's behind the paper or whatever. That's the...
And depending, no matter what, if you're on the first version or the backwards version, Yoshi can now shoot eggs on different planes. Wow. So it's like, it's the typical thing where like the reticle comes up and like you have to aim where you're shooting the egg. But now you can like aim and then turn it over. So it's like you're shooting into the background. Or the foreground. Solve puzzles. And then there's like these little poochies, little dogs. On the reverse, when you're doing the comeback, you're supposed to find three hidden poochies. It's very much like as you're playing it, there's a co-op mode. You can tell they're like trying to make it like just a dad and their little kid playing through together. And it just disappointed me because it's like with such a cool art style, with so many opportunities for cool puzzle mechanics, we're not going to get them. I just don't see it at all.
That sucks. Okay.
Yeah.
But if you got kids, it sounds like, is it a recommended, like if you are in that situation, you're saying you would recommend it or you're not sure?
I don't know. I mean, I'm with you where it's like, I'd give them New Super Mario Bros. Deluxe because like that is an accessible game, but it also has the depth. Yeah. Whereas this is kind of like, I don't know. I don't really.
Might be a fun Sunday afternoon is what it sounded like to me.
I don't know that I'm going to play through this whole game.
Yeah.
When it comes out, I'm going to give it a shot and like see as far as I get. But like, I have a feeling I'm going to get bored give up.
Was this build a preview build or a final, like basically?
Preview build, but yeah, I imagine Nintendo, it's pretty close. It's coming out March 29th.
Okay. So, Nintendo rarely shows like an early release. In fact, I can't even remember. other than at like E3, you know, you very rarely, it's like, come on down and see, like, it's out in 6 months. Like, that's very rare for Nintendo. It's like,
so you think this is why Reggie retired? He wanted to distance himself from this game?
Yeah, he's like, oh, this is going to bomb. No, I think the Nintendo knows the
he's
level.
Like,
object.
No, it's out. Actually, he's got to ride this one out. It's
I know,
out.
He's in April, I know.
Yeah,
yeah, that's right. Bowser doesn't come in until April.
I think Nintendo has a good grasp on the level of success and how many millions of copies each of their franchise need to sell.
The marketing data for a Yoshi platformer, and
they know where that's going to hit.
Is spent.
And like, to be real, this is going to sell millions of copies. Like, I guarantee this is the best selling Yoshi game.
Anything on Switch now sells
ever.
Yeah, probably ever. Like, I don't. I mean, let me look up Yoshi's story in Yoshi's Island. That, though,
you're really going to find all that. You got it.
That's easy.
You got a shortcut for it.
Like, real quick,
Google
NPD.
I want you to know. I want to hear about Days Gone, Andrea and Greg.
Dying to hear about Days
Great.
Gone.
Great. You need to wait 2 more weeks.
Yeah.
We're able to say we went and played Days. We went and played Days Gone at the event in the World Tour they're doing, and we can't talk till March 6th about it.
I got to sit down with John Garvin. We had a nice interview. It's going to be going up on the What's Good podcast feed. Garvin.
Is Crave Director?
He's the Crave Director. Okay. Yeah. Sorry.
You had to have been you.
Yeah. Okay. So he was great. I didn't get enough time with him. I easily could have asked him like 45 minutes worth of questions, but he had back-to-back interviews all day because the San Francisco stop was the first on this big press tour that they're doing leading up to the launch of the game, and so that's why the embargo is so far out.
Yeah, because they're going everywhere.
And there was no capture at the event this time. They're providing B-roll, so. Mm.
Eric Jensen didn't come, though, because he's a coward.
Mm.
I mean, can we sum up what the game is, or did you learn more about what it is that you can't talk about? Like, in other words, I wasn't sure from the trailers, but did we actually know before this event pretty much? Like, my impression is you kind of roam around, maybe like in Far Cry or whatever, and you go to these different camps and there's different skills you learn, but it's fairly open world. Is that all known?
I mean, it's
before
an open, yeah. I mean, I'll base it strictly off the Judges Week demo
played
we
at
did.
E3.
Right?
Yeah,
where I think, you left that knowing what that game was, that it's open world. You're on, it's not you learning skills as much as you. Well, I mean, I guess there is.
Because
I
haven't played it, and so I've only seen the trailers.
Sure,
you know,
sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's, I mean, it's an open world zombie game. It's
earn,
you know,
skills. Level up,
of course.
I guess.
Yeah, exactly.
You're
tied
to your motorcycle. Like, you build up your motorcycle too with different skills and
Or if you pre-order, you can get a special motorcycle.
You get the Kratos motorcycle.
When are we going to hear more about this?
Not next Gamescast, but the Gamescast after that. March 7th, the one we recorded.
Barrett, can you talk about when you're talking about your thing?
I cannot talk about when I can talk
about
Well,
at some point, Barrett's going to tell us about a cool
stuff
game.
Too. We're in this interesting holding pattern, right? On this Gamescast in particular. Yeah. Where we saw a bunch of previews we can't talk about. Anthem drops for us tonight at midnight, unless we're a PC dork TurboTaxin flame Mirabella or whatever.
TurboTaxin.
Yeah.
That's what PC users do all day.
Super Mario World 2 Yoshi's Island sold 12.23 million copies, which is a lot more than I expected.
So 23 million copies.
No, 12 million.
12.3.
So it's 12.23.
Yes.
So 12,230,000 copies.
Yes.
Okay, I got confused when you said 12.23. I'm like, wait, that's not how numbers work.
Yeah, it's not. But 12 million copies, which is a lot more than I expected, but also it is one of the best Super Nintendo games, if not the best games of all time, so I understand that. But then Yoshi's Story drops down to less than 3 million.
Woo!
And then you start even looking at, like, Yoshi's Woolly World's 1.5. This is going to sell double that easily.
You think it's going to sell like 6 million copies?
Oh, in its lifetime, I think it's going to probably hit over 5.
I think that's probably a fair for Switch in its lifetime.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think these Yoshi games fly under the radar for a lot of Switch owners.
I mean, the Switch has proven so far that it's like, if it hit 1.5 on the Wii U, it's going to double it at least. And that's in its first year.
3 million, I'll give you. 6 million. Different number.
3 million in a year, though. And the thing is, Nintendo games sell. They just keep selling. Yeah. You know what I mean? It's not like it's going to stop.
Well, yeah, but they've got a lot of other stuff, you know, coming down the pipeline. I don't know. Is this another bet we have to place?
We can do it.
What happened to my pizza party, by the way?
You had to show. You had to choose. Do you want a Thursday or do you want a Friday?
So now we're going to punt
party?
It.
What was this bet? You guys have a
I
lot
lost
of
the, I lost a bet to her about Anthem getting delayed. I know. It's how I keep the
About Anthem being delayed?
Here's the thing. You know what it is? Like, I got to keep life interesting, yeah. All right? And how I do that is risking pizzas left and right. Because exactly. Either way, I get a pizza.
Risky pizza.
No, I don't want to do a bet on this one, Tim. Purely,
make a bet.
Purely, I'm not a coward. I just want a bet. It's purely because in order for us to come back to it, we have to wait probably forever. A full year, right?
Yeah. Forever.
Yeah. Well, no, because I'm saying I know. It's like a year, I'll give
it's
it three.
Be a while.
That'd
yeah,
be
that's
awesome.
A long bet.
Like in fucking, you just bust into Andrea's retirement home one day. I'd be curious
what's analogous to it that's something that's already sold that's of that type. Kirby. So how much did Kirby sell, you said? Did you have that number or no?
Kirby Star Allies?
Yeah.
Yeah. That would be like that's what I would look for and then sort of apply a little Yoshi math, carry the two. And,
but people like Yoshi more than they like Kirby.
That's what they do. And that's what Reggie's been doing up there the whole time.
Sure.
Now
sure.
It's up to King Bowser, whatever.
King Bowser
his name
does
is.
Need yeah. to figure it out. Yeah.
Exactly. It's all right if you can't find it.
The last number I'm seeing here is around 2 million, but okay. that was like over 7 months ago. So
okay,
but I mean that's a good benchmark because games are going to sell the bulk of their copies in the first 3 to 6 months. Huh. They're not
Nintendo
most games, unless you're a weird anomaly like GTA, mm-hmm. you're not going to sell more in after the first 6 to 12 months than you do in the first 6 to 12 months.
True, but those big, now I'm not saying Yoshi necessarily, but those big Nintendo franchises like Mario and Zelda, they just keep, like everybody just gets
Mario,
them every year. They have this
Mario
heartbeat that's bigger
than
the
poster
rest.
Child for the Nintendo yeah. brand. He's always going to sell.
Totally. I just mean it is Nintendo first party, so you got to, again, carry the two because it's Nintendo first party. It's going to
yeah,
sell
at
a higher.
But look at all the other games that have come to Switch so far. Like ARMS didn't mm-hmm. sell as well as I think we all
totally
thought it was going
franchise.
To sell. It did well.
Are you kidding me?
ARMS no, did, it did well, but I'm saying I thought ARMS was going to do. I thought it was going to do more.
Oh, I thought it was going to tank it.
That's
like,
my
what,
thing.
You thought it was going to tank?
I thought it like yeah. was.
I never
a
got to play
it. The gameplay was so
sales.
Innovative and cool that, and there was so little to play on the Switch when it came out. I thought for sure it was going to do way more than it did, but. Yeah.
It's so, I forget what the number was. I remember when I heard it, I was like, wow, yeah, like, ARMS really, is really a long. Hit. But that was also as Switch was like just taking off.
Yeah, you
it was like crazy.
People would
at the time.
Buy anything.
Yeah. I was like, what is going on? Like Zelda was just, it sold, Zelda, if you remember, sold at a higher install base than the console itself. It was like a 1.1 ratio.
Well, because it was on
the,
Wii U too, don't
it was
forget.
Crazy. Yeah. Well, there was that, but meaning with Switch, it actually sold at a higher rate because people had bought
just the Switch,
the collector's edition, and then they rebought it or something.
Yeah, they were buying two.
It was
copies.
Crazy.
The digital version.
Yeah,
too.
So it ended up selling at a higher rate somehow because of that. It was nuts.
Yeah, ARMS is over 2 million.
See, that's what I'm saying. I thought it would do at least 4 to 5 million.
There you go. That's it. Is it's a good point IP. Of reference, though. It became yeah. big, and it only did 2 million in now 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
So to get to 5, Yoshi's got a way to go.
Oh, I think Yoshi's going to kill yeah. ARMS.
But I do think in the time, you know, lifetime, it'll get there. Why are we so on these bets, man?
Don't know.
Because we don't you want to keep it interesting for you?
I do.
It's like, think of it this way, Fran. You like hot stuff, right?
Oh.
But you eat so much hot stuff, now you have to keep eating hotter stuff.
Yeah, it's escalation.
You know what I mean? Exactly.
So they say, oh, the bets, and you're like
yeah,
immune.
Exactly.
You're immune to
it
like.
It used to just be, hey, yeah. let's have a civilized conversation, yeah. and we'll see who wins. Good luck, chum. Right. And now it's like, I've had enough of that shit.
That's true.
Now let's bet things.
It's escalation, and it's like, daddy needs a fix.
Exactly.
I need a bet.
Let's play the ponies.
I want
to make a Google Doc that's just kind of funny bets.
Oh, yeah.
And then we'll have it.
I wanted
and then
the chalkboard wall.
Yeah,
but that's a bad idea.
Kevin bought all the stuff, and then everybody's like, no chalkboard wall. And look at the wall. Blank
he just
as hell.
Had a hammer great. Out early. Kevin, let's come on.
Why'd
let's
you
get
veto
that
the chalkboard wall?
Because I don't want chalk dust
Kevin?
Everywhere.
Oh, my God.
You think chalk dust is going to go everywhere? You're not, like, doing math equations every day on it.
Andrea, everywhere. Kevin works here.
everywhere. That's true.
He's right.
What if we whiteboard the whole wall and then just, like, give Cool Greg a section to just do tagging?
Oh, actually,
give him a section.
Wait,
oh yeah.
Would the landlord let you do that? You know, you can paint the wall with
that's
the.
That's literally what he's talking
oh,
about.
Oh, you did.
Yeah,
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Missed it.
It's fine. Don't worry. You're up here being a freelancer.
I'm in the Frantham.
Yeah, exactly.
Finger what game can you talk about, Greg? Can you talk about Assassin's Creed Odyssey DLC?
I sure can.
Great.
Sure
wait,
can.
There's new DLC that just came out?
No. There's new stuff dropping every week and stuff. They have another big update next week. I don't know if we haven't talked about this. Next week, a new game plus is dropping for it, taking the level cap to 99.
Wow. Yeah. I have a long way to go
no,
on
God,
that
no.
game.
Jesus Christ. Oh, God, no. Because I don't even want to. Because you'd go back and you can take your save and you'd bring in all your items. You'd bring in all your money. You'd bring in most
of
your...
It's like New Game Plus.
Exactly. It is. That's what I said.
That's
New Game Plus.
That's literally what
yeah.
he said for
But you said level
you
cap.
You missed a step every
no,
time.
No, I'm super tired from staying up late. But what I was thinking about was you hit a level cap, and I for some reason, you said the mode's name, but I didn't realize you start over.
Yeah.
What's the cap at, though, currently?
Currently, it's 60? What, 70?
Is it 70?
Yeah, they upped it already. Yet, right? Yeah, because 60 was the original cap. Was it? Or no, 50 was, and then they took it to 70, and now it's 99.
The first DLC pack lifted it, and I think they lifted it again. Yeah.
So no, yeah, a cheap promotion. Hey, everybody. I guess this isn't cheap at all. Well, it is if you're not watching on YouTube. if you're watching later on YouTube, come over to patreon.com/kindoffunnygames. Kevin and I are doing the first installment of the Kind of Funny Video Game Club directly after this, talking Odyssey.
And it is cheap. $1.
$1. Anybody on patreon.com/kindoffunnygames will see what happens.
Catches. What is the video game club?
It's where we pick one game to have an in-depth conversation with every month with the community. And we picked Assassin's Creed this time around.
Awesome.
So I was, dusting it back off, jumped back in there. I went in with the intention of I'm going to beat episode 2 of the DLC here. And then in traditional Assassin's Creed fashion, I was like, well, I want to see what this side quest is. Well, I'm going to do this thing. Well, and I never did it. But I just ran around, had a great time. I'm wearing my new, last time I turned it on, I bought a new armor set with the Helix credits, of course. Because again,
which one?
100 hours into this game, they earn it. It's the Athena. Athens, Athena, right? That's a set or whatever. And it's the one where it's like...
It looks really cool.
It looks awesome. And it's showing off Cassandra's midsection because she's got great abs. This is a big
movement. She really does.
There wasn't enough abs show. She has these great abs and we
the
hide
Spartan
in these giant
Renegade armor
outfits.
That's inspired by Kratos is awesome. Really good. And the buff is like 50% crit damage when you're wearing all the pieces.
Yeah, exactly. And so that was the nice thing about this one, right? Of jumping to that, this one I thought was a nice counteraction to that, where that one's like red and very negative energy. This one's white and wrapped around her body, really cool. And she's got this cool gold thing you wrap around your body.
And doesn't she have the glowy eyes?
No, that's another one. They have another one that's like the ethereal or whatever armor set. And I thought about that. I was like, I'm going to stick with this because it looks good. And here I am. You know, at the end of the journey, which is apparently never going to end, but I'm so committed to this game, I feel like this is what she needs to be wearing right now.
Yeah.
Because I rocked the Wonder Woman outfit for a long, long time.
Yeah.
And then I jumped over
to Are there any trophies attached to this, though?
There's DLC stuff, yeah. But, like, even, Odyssey's not a game, Fran. It's a way of life.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
That's why I've not touched it. I'm like, I know I would like it, and I know I can't. Like, I don't have time for it.
No, it's like coming home every time, and no, I'm not motivated. I have the Platinum already. I'd like to knock out the rest of the trophies, but I'm not. That's not my motivation. Yeah, like I'm just in there playing and exploring and, you know, seeing new characters, new storylines, all that stuff.
You got Tetris 99
I do have Tetris 99 too as well.
You're in the throes. You don't have time for this Assassin's Creed.
Well, that's why it's always a nice thing to come back to. And it's one of those weird things that, you know, I feel like we talked about it with Spider-Man when I jump back into the Spider-Man DLC, trying to remember all the buttons and learn all that stuff. Like the design of the Assassin's Creed combat system is so good that there is no learning curve. I jump right back in. I'm ready to go. I know where everything is.
It only takes like 2 times of me swinging my sword at my horse by accident, and then I'm like, whoops, that's the wrong button.
Yeah, don't do that. Don't hit those anymore.
No, I'm good.
Well, I was going back and forth between Red Dead and Assassin's Creed, which was a mistake.
A dead horse. You try to get on the horse and press the wrong button. Right?
And then
my square, and you're like,
but luckily you can't kill your horse in Assassin's Creed like you can in Red Dead. Yeah. So that's they just run away for a second, then they come right back.
Yeah.
Speaking of Tetris.
Yeah.
Tetris 99, you've been playing that and Tetris Effect.
Right, so Tetris 99, the obsession continues. Update for the story is that I obviously have been super into it since launch. Jen had watched me play or heard enough of me playing that she's like, I'm going to get into this too. And
isn't
I'm like,
it
okay.
A week old? That's it?
Yeah.
Like, it's crazy.
But when I came here last time after DICE, I was still ranting and raving about it, right?
Yeah.
But then we had a weekend where all we did was play Tetris 99. And to the point that John and Andrea had to text us and be like, stop playing Tetris 99 and come out and get a drink and come go to dinner. Funny. And so we did. But yeah, it took over the living room where Jen was playing on the TV. And then I was trying to balance, you know, the screen, do all this different stuff. And finally I was like, fuck it. And I went and got the other Switch dock and the game screen.
Yeah,
hooked it up and sitting there playing. If you're a visual listener, you can see right there, I'm using the Joy-Con grips now. Because this is a pro strategy for everybody.
Yeah.
Before I was using the pro, I was using it handheld. It's not bad, but it's also you got to try to balance the weight of it, right? And I was like, I can't wait to get home to my pro controller. Got home to my pro controller, right? And then one D-pad that the pro controller has, I found myself accidentally hitting up all the time and hard dropping pieces when I didn't want to.
It's so funny.
That happened to me too.
Because for so long, all these motherfuckers were like, Tim, you're bitching and complaining about the D-pad. It's not that bad, whatever. And I was like, guys, it is. Like, I was playing Celeste.
The placement is too close together. Yeah.
Kev, can you get a pro controller when you're not in the middle of Tetris 99? I see you're in the middle of Tetris.
And now it's like with Tetris, it's like you definitely need that precision shit. I'm like, told y'all.
You did tell somebody. He trusts you.
He trusts the Anthem skills. Kevin just tossed the Pro Controller.
So yeah, what I did is then I moved for the first time ever.
So what happens is it's too close to the thumbstick. And so if you're over here moving the thumbstick.
Why are you using the thumbstick at all?
Because
to hard drop pieces.
But why don't you just move everything with a D-pad?
You can't. So the thumbstick moves in You haven't played Tetris 99 yet.
Well, I did for one round, but yeah.
So the thumbstick moves the cursor so you can manually select.
Oh, I didn't know how to. I didn't do that yet. Yeah, so I see. The analog stick, you're selecting who you're you're targeting.
Right.
I didn't do that yet.
But even moving pieces left or right.
Yeah, they're like, I'm not even talking about what you're talking about. I'm talking
also,
about the D-pad.
Greg's moving point, though, is these are individual buttons on the Joy-Cons, whereas this is a traditional D-pad. Yeah. And so if you don't precision
sometimes
hit,
you're hitting up by
sometimes
accident.
Sometimes your thumb will accidentally. Yes, exactly.
Less worried about that. But I do understand the. Like, I like the D-pad. I'm just saying.
I like the D-pad on the Pro Controller. I'm just saying,
like
in this one instance.
You can make
in this one instance.
In this one instance, I think what he's trying to say is the developers have not fine-tuned the way that they're using the input system on the Pro Controller.
I'm getting that mush. I'm getting that mush up when I don't want it. I'm trying to go left, and I hit up with my fat finger. Okay. You know what I mean?
Right.
Okay. So, yeah, now I'm using the Joy-Con grip. And that's perfect.
It's way better.
It's, yeah, that's the best it can be.
The one good use of the Joy-Con grip.
But then, of course, I keep topping out at 3, Tim. I can't get past 3. You know what I mean?
It's still a good number.
It's a great number, but it's not when you see Andrew Goldfarb like falling ass backwards into ones. And he's like, I don't even know how I did it. I've never seen Tetris. You know, pencil neck geek over at IGN. Not anymore. Rest in peace. And it's like, all right, I got to get serious about this. And so then I went down the rabbit hole of watching videos, and I'm like, maybe I just need to finally use the T-spin. I don't use a T-spin often. I know T-spins are important. Taking the, you know, the little T piece.
Oh.
Spinning it into spots, so you get 3 rows at once. People build out their entire. This is a pro Tetris strat.
It's like hooking under stuff.
Exactly.
Right?
That I've known is important to spin it into place and stuff, but I've never learned it. I've been fine with my own skills and my own shortcomings. I am no longer fine with my shortcomings. So I was looking at videos, doing all this stuff. I'm reading wikis. Fucking. Kevin, this Michael kid at IGN. What a hack.
You know
what I mean? Where I tweeted out my thing and I was like, oh man, number 3, I'm getting there. And he's like, doesn't look like number 1, Greg. And I'm like, listen here, Mike from IGN, I don't need your shit. And then he's like, check out my guide. And I already looked on it because I already knew he was really good. I'd already heard the stories of him getting 6 wins in day 1. And I was like, when he said, it's not a number 1, Greg, wink. And I was like, you motherfucker. And I said something. And then I clicked on his profile and I was like, I'm going to fucking find out how you're so good. And he's like, here's the guide I wrote for IGN. I'm like, fucking great. And I click on it. And the guy's literally just like, just use T-spins. I'm like, fuck you. That's not helpful. And he's not even telling me how. Well, I mean, like this. So here's where we're. Stick with me. It's a totally different mindset. You know what I mean? And I feel like, I'm playing the best Tetris of my life right now in these Tetris games. And I'm getting to number 3, you know what I mean? Sometimes I'll be like, man, I'm fucking, my heart's going, I'm crushing it, I'm killing it, and I look at the thing, I'm like, number 19. I'm like, there's still, I'm trying this hard right now, and there's 19 other fuckers. God damn it.
So other than the T-spins, because I am ready to rage quit Tetris 99, I'm not even fronting. What are the pro tips that you have about how to use the targeting system? Because you and Joey were giving me a couple of tips before we started.
Yeah, and last night Goldfarb was trying to tell me that like he goes badges because it's trying to get you badges instead of attack badges. Is that true? You have to get on the microphone. You're talking too much.
Because
I want explanations more. I thought badges targeted badges people, but then it's getting you badges. I thought eliminating people, Kevin, got me the badges.
He's literally playing Tetris 99 while he's...
Kevin, wasn't I supposed to direct the show so you could go do work?
Yeah. Bear, that's all right. You're right. Cool.
What place are you right now?
I mean, I just started.
Oh, good. You know, just keep playing.
I've been playing horribly right now, and it's depressing.
Well, you got to warm up. That's the other thing, too.
Yeah.
It sucks that, like, I mean, like, when I'm the most competitive, I've been playing for like 30, 45 minutes. That's when I'm like, all right, I'm there. I've fallen into the zone. There are times, Tim, where it's as if Tetris, some Russian ghost named Tetris took me over. And I'm making moves and I'm seeing the Matrix.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh my God, I'm doing it. And then the next game, I can't remember how to do it like that. You know what I mean? Like, I'm right there. I'm having those breakout moments. I'm just not getting it done.
I've said this before a bunch of times on this show. It's like, I've never understood Tetris. I played Tetris. It's fine. It's like, people are like, I'm good at Tetris. I'm like, I didn't know that was a thing.
Oh, yeah. You should watch it. Yeah.
But then it's like I've read wikis. Like before Tetris 99, I've just been like, How, like, what are the key things that I, like, what's the language of Tetris? And it always is the same thing of just like, they just tell you, but it'd be the same thing as like looking up how to play basketball. Sure. It's like, you either know how to do it or you don't. It's like, well, them telling you how to do plays and shit isn't gonna help you.
The more you learn how to put different Tetraminos together in formations to build out an actual Tetris, because that's the goal, right? You don't want to just necessarily clear a single line at a time. That is a strategy, but particularly in Tetris 99, like, that's not really going to get you to the end of the game. Like, you need to be able to like wave clear multiple rows at a time. So you have to be able to telegraph where you're going to put blocks by watching the Tetraminos that are coming in the column on the right. Right. So it's more about like map awareness, for lack of a better phrase.
I get all of that. I just, I don't get the, no one's ever been like, okay, if you get this shape, you're going to want to look for these type of shapes. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, you're trying to create these different
Yeah, and there are those things, right? Right, like trying to create the same types of shapes so you can do these whatever.
Exactly, spins.
Like, because that's a more, call it, guaranteed.
So now that you
success.
Have a break in the action, Kevin, you don't know the next piece. Let's talk about your targeting tactics.
So I'm no pro. I have yet to get a win. I'm getting a lot of twos and threes though.
My
and man, it hurts.
Yeah.
Every two is like a stab to the eyeball. Yeah. Where I just want to stop.
Yeah, yeah.
But you're so close, so why not play
and
one
so you
more
do it again,
game?
And that's the one where you get knocked out at 83. Yeah.
And you're just
you
like,
fucking
oh.
get clowned out at 83.
But so, for, oh, I was going to say really quick. For my attacking, what I usually do is I start at bad. Just I don't understand 100% what it does, but I do that till I'm about 50% or in the top 50. Mm-hmm. Then I move over to attacks. And then I'll do that till I'm in the top 10. Then it's... KO. Wait, I'm sorry. KO and then attackers.
Gotcha.
Because the idea behind it is, with that first, I'm trying to get badges so that my attacks count more.
Right.
And then I'm trying to KO as many people as possible. These little up arrows in the bottom right corner, the more of them you get, the more your attack multiplies.
Well, how do you get them? Okay. Are they like combo accolades or what?
Yeah.
Oh, taking people out, you get bad. So you gain like a weight.
See, but that still doesn't make sense to me, because why? So what's the difference between targeting badges or targeting KOs?
I mean, I'm pretty sure at the beginning it doesn't matter.
Well, sure,
because KOs aren't close.
Well, you
got to
get people
close,
there. Yeah.
What happens a lot of times if I start with KOs is I get a lot of people attacking.
Sure.
Me.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Because they'll target. They're looking at attackers. Yeah. Anyways, so
well, that's great to hear. There's so much depth.
Fell down this Tetris 99 rabbit hole and was playing some of the best Tetris of my life, but still just not getting the job done. You know what I mean?
You know Mike Wynn.
I am no Mike Wynn.
Yeah. I just want to watch him play.
Yeah.
And so then it got to me of like, I need to practice. You can't really practice in Tetris 99. So I was like, maybe I'll practice in Tetris Effect. Also, I wanted to see, are my skills getting to where they need? Because again, I would consider myself good at Tetris. And then when Tetris Effect got here, I was not in Tetris shape. And so I was just getting climbed out and I was feeling like, oh God. And there was a million other things. So I was only popping in playing a little bit. And so I was like, let's jump into where I left off in Tetris Effect, where I was like getting climbed out. And I just fucking ran through that shit.
Oh, wow.
Like so Drano. You know what I mean?
Mental aerobics.
Yeah, totally. It was back. I'm back, baby.
I'm back.
But now I need to still keep getting, I got to get out there. I got to get a win in Tetris 99. I won't rest until I have a win in Tetris 99.
Oh, you still don't have the win?
No.
Lots of twos and threes.
Lots of threes. He's getting lots of twos and threes. I've topped out at a three, and I've topped out there many a time.
Okay.
Man. I don't know about lots. I'm getting like maybe four or five a night.
Just take a BK.
That's good.
You're doing it.
That's
doing
good,
it.
Kevin.
You're doing it. Gross. I gotta try this. I mean, matches typically last how long, would you say? I mean, mine, I just played it, only lasts about like 2 minutes.
Yeah, that's the thing.
I only made it to 53. But.
Seven to like.
Okay.
If you're going the distance, yeah.
But are they longer than 15 minutes ever?
No.
Okay,
no, I haven't had that. I mean, if you get into a real heated
one-on-one. Because after you get to a certain amount of eliminations, the speed of the Tetraminos
starts dropping quicker.
And then like the race is on, right? Because like if you make one little mistake, like if you accidentally speed drop, when it's going that fast, you're screwed.
Yeah. I am so impressed that this worked.
Yeah.
Battle Royale Tetris, it's like, wow. Like, and even when we first saw it in the direct, I didn't get it.
I honestly, same impression you probably had. I'm like, oh, well, it's just Tetris and you defeat other
You're
people
playing and other people are but, playing behind
but
you.
This
but
amount
whatever.
Of depth and thinking of like the targeting
the
and
battling
scene.
And stuff. Like,
and
that's
it's
really
active
cool.
too, right? Where it is like, I usually start on attackers and then once we get going, move to KOs. But then when I start getting the pieces dropped by other people, I'm like, oh, fuck, target somebody else so that I'm not getting
How
shit
do you
thrown
know?
Back at me.
So there's the badges, there's KOs, and there's
random.
There's a little grid, a little like T grid at the very top of the puzzle box, and you can use the thumbstick to select which ones you want to auto attack, or you can also manually select by by hovering over the person's box on the right or left side.
And I'm sure that some supercomputer person is doing that, and that's how they're winning the most. But yeah, for most people are just leaving it on.
Is it kind of a rock, paper, scissors system, or is it just different ways to attack?
No, there's four different ways to attack. Well, technically five if you include the manual attack. And so the problem with Tetris 99 that I'm finding is that I'm having trouble attacking because I'm so focused on the puzzle element that I'm trying to succeed by clearing lines.
That's the beauty of it.
Right, no, but that's what makes it really challenging for people, right? And so it's easier early on, obviously, when the Tetromino speed isn't too challenging. But then once you cross like 50 people eliminated and it starts to speed up, that's when it's like when the strategy of who you're attacking becomes more important, but it also becomes increasingly more difficult.
Yeah.
That's so great.
Just for conversation purposes, it's been out a week, as we just pointed out, right? Dice was last week. I've played 9.5 hours. I've played 184 games.
Wow.
That's a lot.
Wait, 9.5 hours for how many games?
184.
Okay.
Jeez. That is insane of Tetris.
It's good stuff, guys.
I agree with Kevin. It's good stuff. A total so far of 7,448 lines cleared.
Man. Nice. We had 184 games. Wow. So some of them... I thought I was doing my math wrong, but that's an average of 3 minutes a game. Because sometimes out, three minutes a game on average.
Some games
my math.
Quick.
Oh, yeah.
Nine and a half,
I got a 94 once.
Yeah.
Sad. Not
I
fair.
Hated myself.
That's
I went
awesome.
To
that's really good.
How did that happen, Kevin?
I literally got attacked by like
any given Sunday,
once.
Man. This is why we don't play them on paper.
That does it. I mean, sometimes you get targeted by multiple people at the same time because the algorithm just happens to select you. Because I had been playing it on random attacking because I just was like, I need to like get the feel of it before I start to really think about strategy. And there are times when you'll just get like 10 lines built up underneath you and then you're kind of done for.
Man.
It's great.
99.
Do you guys know the developer? I was looking it up and it looks, I'm seeing Google's pulling up some name called Arica. I've never heard of them. Nope.
I can restart the interview. Okay. I'll get you an answer on that one.
Okay. No, I was just curious what they did. Yeah, developer is Arica, A-R-I-K-A, in all capitals. I don't know what they've done before, but very
curious.
I'm going to
look them up. Say it again.
A-R-I-K-A. And credits due where credits due. That's the thing. Like, it was, I guess, produced with Nintendo, right? Mm-hmm. I'm curious if they have any history before this and, like, what their...
Games
my guess is they've done Tetris before.
A lot of Street Fighter EX games.
Ah.
So EX, EX Plus, EX Plus A, EX 2. They did Tetris the Grandmaster for arcades in 1998.
Wow, that was a long time ago.
And Tetris Grandmaster Ace on 360.
Kevin, next when we get a better office and a bigger office, we should get a Tetris arcade.
Actually, I thought you were saying
the
like
Tetris
puzzle
arcade
fire
is old school shit, and I that's not.
You don't fuck
fun.
With that. You don't fuck
it's
with that.
It's just so slow.
And they did, also, I mean, you know, they did all the 3D classics on the 3DS. So they have like a in the last 5 years, they've been really heavily partnered with Nintendo.
Wait, they did Bust the Move, front. And they did, because Bust the Move is a puzzle, right?
And Dr. Mario Online.
And, they did Dr. Mario, and they did Jewelry Master, which I've never played.
Dr. Mario, love that game.
Great. Dr. Mario's so good. Anyway, very interesting. Wow, they've been just doing stuff for a long time, but hats off them. The depth, I wanted to give credit. Like, wow. Like when I saw it, I just was like, okay, it's Tetris.
It's awesome that it's like... taken over, right? That so many people are into it.
What occurs to me that is additionally innovative, it is the first, as far as I know, battle royale where you can see every other player while you're playing, which is normally you get to like peek in and find out what happened after. But this is like, I mean, you're truly head to head with 98 people at once, which is fascinating.
And I love that you can see where all of their blocks are at any given time. I think that that's really a nice touch.
Also, like just from watching gameplay videos of it, when you see the little hallway on the right with all the upcoming pieces,
right?
Tetris games usually don't do that, right? Usually, you only
no,
get
they
like
do.
One.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm off my Tetris game since the Game Boy.
It's all right. I mean? Greg's now just playing a casual game of Tetris 99 while we're recording
the
podcast.
Maybe I can do it. Maybe I can hit it right here.
It might be this one, ladies and gentlemen. This episode of Gamescast is brought to you by Robinhood. Thank you very much for sponsoring this episode. Robinhood is an investing app that lets you buy and sell stocks, ETFs, options, and cryptos all commission-free. While other brokerages charge up to $10 for every trade, Robinhood doesn't charge any commission fees, so you can trade stocks and keep all of your profits. Plus, there is no account minimum deposit needed to get started, so you can start investing at any level. The simple, intuitive design of Robinhood makes investing easy for newcomers and experts alike. View easy to understand understand charts and market data, and place a trade in just four taps on your smartphone. You can also view stock collections such as 100 most popular. With Robinhood, you can learn how to invest in the market as you build your portfolio. Discover new stocks, track your favorite companies, and get custom notifications for price movements so you never miss the right moment to invest. Robinhood is giving listeners of the Kind of Funny Games cast a free stock like Apple, Ford, or Sprint to help you build your portfolio. Sign up at greggy.robinhood.com. That's greggy.robinhood.com.
Oh, you're now doing the back. Thing. You're doing, yeah, the thing. Doing the thing. I don't do the thing often, and you get mad at
we're
me.
We're trying to get better at it.
I know.
Dang, I thought you were really going to do it. I was going to go to the back.
Yeah, I know. Now on the on Kind of Funny Podcast and Kind of Funny Games cast, we record the ad after.
Smarter way to do it.
So that we can export this for the Patreon directly people directly.
Because we're still live here. Exactly.
Because we're live. It's fantastic. Anthem. Mr. Frantham himself.
We're jumping to that already.
Frantham. Yeah.
So I want to label this.
Sweating over here. Like,
this episode.
It's okay. We're
going to
talk about
it
again next week.
Yeah, we are. Yeah. Oh, and I can't wait till you guys have played it.
But I want the headline for this episode to be Franz Anthem Review.
Yeah, and it is. So I can give you that.
Let's go.
Woo! So, no spoilers, obviously. And, you know, Andrew and Greg, you guys still have to play more than what you've already played. Greg, you still haven't played really any.
Never touched it.
None of it.
Never touched it. Very
excited.
You've
played at E3, open demo.
Quite a bit, yeah.
Early release stuff behind closed doors. All right, here's the deal, people. Number one. Here's what I can say about this. Anthem, with all the hype and it being a BioWare game, I think there's a lot of expectation for, is it a BioWare game? I would love to hear from more people that are like Mass Effect people, what they think. Hopefully you guys can bring that to it. I'm not as much that person. I played Mass Effect 1 and 2. I played, like, dabbled in the rest. I just never really had time. But I do appreciate everything that they've done in the early Mass Effects and well before that. So my commentary there, though, is there's about a 20-hour experience. You could do it as few as 12. If you want a mainline story, a lot of people, you know, the end gamers, as I'll call them, were like skipping through. So I didn't do that. I absolutely played and listened. And I'd say, I've heard mixed reviews on that. My personal reviews, I became somewhat attached to the characters. I understood what was going on.
Okay.
They had some really cool cutscenes, but it was very spread out. Maybe "very" is the wrong word, but it's not, you know, because of the type of game it is, and I just want to remind people that it's not like a classic BioWare game. It is an open world game, and so it does, in some ways, it suffers from the here. It opens with a cinematic, puts you in the javelin. You're not really making choices that time. You're pushing forward in this very cinematic, you know, stuff raining down from the sky kind of feel, which is awesome. Like, yeah, let's go. And then it drops you into the Fort Tarsus, you know, and then you can talk to anybody, and then it sends you into free play, and then you got to collect treasure chests at one point. And like, that's not all the gameplay, but you're sort of learning your javelins and your combos. Again, I would remind that
I learn my combos?
I hope you do, because there's a lot of options. And so this is really where I can see they spent tons of time on the feel of the javelins, the diversity of the javelins, and the ways that you can, like, you know, have your RPG system set up. And I really like a lot of that. I love the feel of the game. For me, it is worth the price of entry.
Nice.
Just for that. But.
And your price of entry was a lot.
Yeah, tons of time.
Well,
I also did buy the
game.
Yeah, I actually
thing,
did
right?
buy Origin Access, my money out of my pocket. It's important to disclose that too. But I love these types of games. Now, that first 20 hours, though, I'm happy to get past. Let me say that.
Oh, really?
That sucks. So, twists. As much as I can say I'm okay with it, so I'm going to walk it back a little because I can see you guys were definitely confused by what I was saying.
No, I have a question, though, after you're done with
this
thought.
No, let's stick on the first 20 before we go to endgame.
From what I've played so far, especially what you and I played at the last preview event where we played together, there was a lot of moments where you could walk around Fort Tarsus and have those really classic BioWare interactions with NPCs.
Yeah.
Right? You kind of like walk up to them. You can have an optional conversation with them. And if you choose not to, maybe you're missing out on a potential side quest or a potential person that you're going to see later on in the game. And I was really looking forward to spending more time talking to all of these various people throughout Fort Tarsus. Did you
feel
like you built some meaningful relationships with any of those NPCs?
Yes, you definitely can. And so I'll use an easy one. It's not a spoiler. You talk to somebody who's like going out and trying to catch rare animals and putting their life in danger, and it's sort of like a goofy, cute thing. And you do make choices, and a lot of people have been wondering this. They're like, wait, what is the conversational choice about? Because left trigger, right trigger, or whatever you're choosing.
And it's just binary choices in Anthem.
Yes. And so you choose something. You do find out later. They'll come back. They're like, oh, I did this thing. Are you sure it was a good thing? You know? And so you do get to develop those relationships, and it's there. But that is the extent of the experience, Andrea. It's like I'm talking to you in Fort Tarsus in first person. You know, it's a third person game otherwise. And you just talk, and you develop that. Some people are going to like that, I think. I'm not there for that gameplay. I'm not a story guy. So again,
see,
I'm
that's very classic BioWare. And I think that's what a lot of people are hoping there's going to be in the game. So I think we knew that it wasn't going to be as big as like a Dragon Age or a Mass Effect.
Yeah.
I mean, they were very clear about that through all of the preview covers that we've done. But I'm a little bummed that it feels like it's not as big as I was hoping for.
Yeah, there's so much that's dependent on the open world. And so that's just what I would stick to really reinforcing here. The things that you've seen in the open demo, barring the, again, the epic intro, and there's a bit of an epic outro. The last two missions I really enjoyed the challenge of, and I'm looking for challenging gameplay, right? So different type of player coming from Destiny and Division. The bookends I really like. I feel like that's where a lot of production was at to make it a, who knows, almost maybe what they wanted it to be, and then they shoved in this open world concept way long ago or something, and they decided they needed to make it all work. It does feel a bit that way. So again, you have this like mainline campaign stuff. I really love the production of those. But then you get dumped into that open world of Bastion, the very beautiful scenery, and it's gorgeous. The lighting changes. The weather's changing right now, actually, in the game. That's going to happen. But it is, there's about three or four enemy types. I mean, I'm exaggerating a bit here. There's a handful of enemy types, handful of things that are going to happen, and you keep just getting sent out. A lot like we've seen in Destiny and even Division.
Yeah, it sounds like Destiny 1.
Yeah, let me put it this way. You were going to say, hopefully, that you keep bringing something to this world because I really like it. I think it has tons of potential in what they've developed, but it is vanilla stage. And so you spend a lot of time, you know, going through an open world and open world. But I love the feeling of the javelins. I've actually only been using one. So Andrea, you could relate to this. Like I was very excited to get access to everything. But it turns out I was like, you know what? I'm going to go to level 30. And there's a commentary, much longer commentary here on like all the drops you're getting. I'm like, honestly, I just need to get to 30 so I get max level drops because I don't want to have to like plow through deleting a bunch of items that I'm frankly not going to use in an hour from now. Mm. So without getting stuck on that, stuck on my Interceptor, which I love. Everybody's playing Storm. I encourage you to play some.
Storm is what? What is Interceptor?
Storm is the elemental javelin that really focuses on like ice and fire attacks, lightning attacks. When I was playing Storm, I really focused more on the combo system more than my guns. I rarely used my guns at all.
That is the game, though, and that's the other thing. Like I keep telling people, I'm like, it's not a shooter. Division is a duck and cover, pen and paper, almost like RPG shooter to a point. Like it's like they're just brick walls, and you're shooting them a ton. Anthem has some of that, but frankly, you should be using a lot of your abilities. I mean, it's not totally fair because you use a lot of abilities in Division, but Division is so much a shooter. And Destiny is a shooter.
And Anthem's not a shooter.
Destiny's all about the guns. Yeah, and Anthem, the guns are like, the guns are second to your abilities.
The guns are support.
Yeah.
Is the way I would phrase it.
And the abilities, which are like
what? It's all about position. So that's why you can fly around and hover and the time that you can hover. Are your shields up? You've got a shield. You know, you got a shield and armor. And so all that and where you're at and the hits you're taking is super important and what abilities you're using. And hopefully to recharge those systems and keep just dropping those abilities on people. There's a left ability and right ability, for lack of a better way to put it. Then you have a double press on both buttons.
The super, the
support
ultimate
system or whatever it is. Oh, no, and then there's the ultimate. So that's the fourth, right? So you have support system. You have an assault system, a strike system. It's different for the characters. But anyway, so that's what the game's about, is where you put yourself in this world. And anyway,
cool.
I really love the feel of it. Man, I mean, you've never felt more like Iron Man in this game. You can drop down on the ground and
so cool.
The jets are so cool. And you can customize your javelin. Like Greg was like joking about my Interceptor looking like Mysterio from the comics, which that's what you want to play Storm for.
It's like the assassin class, the Interceptor.
Gotcha. Okay.
So it's like you're kind of like a glass cannon a little bit, would you say?
I use the word ninja. You're the most ninja type character out of all of them. You're super fast with blades and you're meleeing a ton. Storm is the floating, stay back, probably want a sniper from afar. Colossus, by the way, it's the tank, but man, very cool. This is what speaks to why I recommend, if you're into this type of game, so I'm trying to set expectation. I just loved plowing through a field of enemies. So here's where they're really clever with their javelin design. So, right, you got Storm and its abilities. You can hover longer. You've got Interceptor and Melee. You're super fast melees and you're up close gameplay. You're a ninja up close with
like
a shotgun.
Yeah,
exactly. Are really up in there. And the Ranger is more like an all around class. Lots of support. You can put a bubble over you to bolster your DPS or to protect people. Anyway. The Colossus is one of those super heavy. When you jump off the ground, you can feel like you're about to like get pulled back down by gravity. And so I talked about how it has a shield system and an armor system, right? The clever part about the Colossus is that your shield is actually your blue piece. So, sorry, there's the blue shield meter and the red shield for your armor. Colossus, you go in and you're like, where's my blue? Like, there is none. It's just one bar. And you're like, what the heck? I don't have one? That sucks. But it's literally your physical shield. Mm. When you pull it up, there's a meter over it that's blue. So really neat, like, gameplay design on that. But where I was going with this, you can actually take your shield out. It's an active choice you make. It'll make you slower or whatever. But you can run through a crowd of enemies. And the hit detection is solid, man. They go poof, poof, poof. It's like you just run through, like, a gauntlet and can knock them everywhere.
Well, and it's a detonator. For combo.
Oh, yeah. It can also be, yeah, if somebody's primed with, say, electricity or something.
I was playing with Fran.
I think it's a detonator, right?
So as a storm, I can, like, prime with, like, an ice attack or a fire attack, and then, like, the Colossus or the Interceptor can come in with a melee and detonate it to do a giant combo system. It's really satisfying.
Yeah.
That's cool.
So, to bring that back home, what I'm trying to say is if it excites you that you want to use these different classes, you want to get these different abilities and try these different ultimates, but fly around in, for lack of a better way to put it, the same world with a lot of the same sort of things to do, then I recommend that. There's an excitement in it, but is it worth the price of entry? Then you got to ask yourself, are you an end gamer? And so I'm not going to spoil anything, but frankly, the end game is pretty much what you'd expect. In fact, we got a taste of it in the open demo. So what happens is you get to about level 20 for me in about 20 hours. So your power per hour, I talk about that a lot in these games.
God damn it,
it's pretty much one an hour. So you can probably get to 30 in 30 hours. Yeah, exactly. Oh, dude, I even have a better one.
But it's a real thing for people who play these kinds of games.
To be clear to everyone at home, I'm not saying goddammit for that. I'm saying goddammit because back at IGN, Fran had this damn thing called
VPH,
which is views per man hour, which is like, how much work are you putting into your fun projects, Tim?
And I'm like,
enough, Fran. Deal with it. Million views. Let's go.
Look at a million view video, but if it took 10 times the work is like a 100,000 view video. They're the same.
Yeah.
Anyway, so the power per hour, it's going to take you about maybe 30 hours to hit 30. But what's happening between, I get an even better one after this. So between 20 hours and 30 hours, here's something I will say. Again, you're going back and kind of doing a lot of the same stuff. That's what you're starting to experience. I frankly, the 20 to 30 hour mark, what happens is, again, no spoilers, you get access to some of these strongholds. Yeah, and then you have some side quests maybe left over. And so there is a little like continuing story, but it's in, again, kind of same setting, same enemies, whatever. So a lot of that's happening until you get to 30. Once you get to 30, what's going to happen is you want your masterwork because you're trying to fill, you have 11 slots. So like in any of these grindy games, you're trying to get these high level drops. So again, for clarity, what happens is when you get 30, you're going to get purples, which are 36 power. And you're going to get masterworked items, which are 47. And you are trying to get your power up because it affects your shields and all this stuff. So I don't want to go too far off the rails
It's like a light level system, sort of.
Exactly. It's just you want to fill each slot. And what happens is when you get, just for clarity, if you haven't played these types of games, you get this sweet masterwork item, an orange drop in the world. You're like, yes, it's in the same slot you already have. You're like, no, it doesn't raise your power because you need to fill everyone with that.
Yeah, it's like getting 15,000 helmet drops in Destiny.
Exactly. and you do get exactly that. And then on top of it, there's the legendary. I'll call it the highlighter yellow drop. That's the ultra rare. And they each one of those drops come with interesting perks. So there's like dash 3 times. It will increase your shotgun damage by... Or it is a shotgun, so it increases damage by 50% and it stacks. So what happens is you're doing a lot of the same stuff, though, like I'm saying. You've got the strongholds.
Yeah, yeah.
You can play them harder, go back to the world, but you're chasing the masterworks. How many masterworks per hour? Your MPH. Yep. You want to know how to get there. So that is a bit of a
grind. So there's PPH and MPH.
First, there's just, your power. Per hour. But then once you reach the higher level, it's your MPH.
But is it fun? Because that's the thing I think you and I and everybody else who loves Destiny always came back to was that even though we're playing the same strikes, the same missions, the same maps in Crucible over and over again, we're doing it because the gameplay is so solid and the loop is so satisfying that while it's slightly annoying that I have to go do the same strike for like the fifth time or whatever in 3 days, I do it because it's still fun every time.
Yeah. So here's the best analogy I can make there is that, well, here, let me just answer it very clearly first. There's just not enough content right now. Mm-hmm. Let me caveat that by saying, again, there's three strongholds. I just don't want to spoil one thing, but one of the strongholds is like, you're like, oh, well, okay, I guess it's a stronghold, yes. And it is. It's very challenging, but you maybe expected something new. Let's just put it that way.
Okay, yeah.
There's three of those right now. We are waiting for the Cataclysm, which BioWare said is its most ambitious and challenging content in the games. I've not played it yet. Got to wait. So I'm hoping that that is something.
Is there a date on that? You say we're waiting for it. Okay.
So what's going to happen is these storms are going to come to the world and it changes and you're going to be able to like, go through one of these storms, I think, and enter, I'm guessing, and enter this like crazy, maybe closer to a raid, or I don't know if it's going to be as long as a 12-hour raid, right? But remains to be seen. And raids were very important. We don't have that today. We only have three strongholds, and outside that, it is a lot like in Destiny of the public events. So to me, the analogy I was going to make is it feels like you've got three or so Nightfall-esque strikes to do. Those are the strongholds. And then you have a bunch of public events. And there's not a lot in between. And the story took you through these public events. So, like, a lot of it is rooted in that. So, again, I think the world's beautiful, worth the price of entry for me, and it's about the friend game. I'm using the Destiny words out there. But truthfully, that is the most fun I've had in this game. And so, yes, you can play it solo. But if I could sit down and play with all you guys, I think there's a lot of fun to be had, you know, for 30, 50 hours, whatever. And it's so cool.
Stephen James Oslin writes in on patreon.com/kindoffunnygames and says, I was reading the GameSpot review today of Anthem, and one of the criticisms was that engaging with the story and characters while playing with friends is difficult to do. Meanwhile, the gameplay is best served by playing with friends. Do you think it's even possible to balance having a compelling story with meaningful choices in a loot shooter where a core part of the experience is designed around playing with other people who will inevitably detract from those things?
They're definitely at odds. And there's, by the way, we didn't even get to talk about it. There's like been bugs. And I feel like, so the good news is I talked about what I believe is the most important thing, which is the game. It's so easy to talk about the load time and the bug. Yeah, like, but BioWare's been fixing it. I'm not excusing some like my game crashes. That's not excusable for a $60 product. But that's not what it's really about. Like, meaning, is the game any good or not? And like, that's why I focused on that. And they have been improving stuff. Going back to what you're saying, there's just weird at odds issues. So I'll give you one. Is I'm out there doing the story. I actually managed to find some people that were almost at the same spot. You hit this grind in the middle and you're like, do you want to play? And I finished mine. They helped me. But then I was on to the next thing, but they weren't done yet. So we just kept going. They played for like another like 8 hours or whatever.
Jeez.
Only to find out I unlocked my strongholds and stuff. I mean, they weren't getting cutscenes, by the way. Okay, wait, let me walk it back. I'm getting cutscenes. They're sitting there. They're like, what? Well, don't tell me. I'll look at it later for like 8 hours. They're playing the quest with me. But they're not getting the cutscenes in the tower and some other places. I think they saw some of the main cutscenes, but not the in-between. And they also weren't getting the quest progression. So what happened was they were still all the way back. And even though they beat the game with me, they didn't unlock. So you can really tell the story part's a little like it's there. You really need to find a team of people, go in, play it all together. And that is my recommendation. Try to plan it, stick together. If you don't, power through it. Just get through it, enjoy it yourself. And you can matchmake, and there's issues like people when they get ahead of you, it starts to drag you forward.
Yeah, you talked about this rubber band.
In their stream this week, they talked about how they're fixing that.
The load times.
Yeah. Particularly when it comes to that rubber banding issue with your teammates. Yeah. And they said, like, for the...
It is better.
The chest dropping, people were mad about. They said they've expanded the range to 250 meters inside the game.
So people were, like, unlocking a chest, and then you didn't get credit. One of the goals is you gotta get, like, 20 chests for part of this grind.
But they also wanted to say, like, hey, if your teammate's on the other side of the map, they shouldn't be getting credit for a chest you're opening way over there.
Yes.
Right.
But some of that's free play. But anyway, so it has some of these design issues.
What do you think about the issue that I've seen a lot with people talking about swapping loadouts in the amount of load screen walls you hit in your attempt to go back to the forge?
Well, you have to go back between every mission, and that's as well where it's a bit, or it is flawed. Like, you finish a mission and then you sort of have to go to the launch bay, which is a social space, which they added, or you have to go back to Fort Tars. I can't just like go to the next mission right away. And so the real problem is the load times are just a little They take a while. They definitely have improved. I can say I'm on a PC, though, and I'm very curious to hear the console perspective, and I think that's important here. For all I know, it launches tonight, and a bunch of people are like, the console, it's whatever. So buyer beware on that. Well, I guess by Monday, you know, when this hits publicly. But anyway, so I really recommend playing with friends. It's a lot of fun. You definitely can matchmake. It's a question I get all the time. Can I play solo? Absolutely. But you're very disconnected from the other player. You might get a fallen, you might fall down and you're waiting for your res and there's like no, I mean, there is push to talk on PC, but it just doesn't, nobody's using it, it seems, and just sitting there. So there's some oddity with that. It's frankly about the end game, which I was enjoying some of, but I'm looking forward for there to be more content. And in a way, it's experiential, for lack of a better way to put it. I really enjoy what they've done with these javelins in the world, and it has a lot of potential.
So it's got a great skeleton for them to build it out as a game, as service.
Yeah, I really believe it does. One of my major gripes, though, that I'll put out there is, and it's what affects the game, and we've faced it in all of these, but it's one of Bungie's strengths, is AI. We've seen it in Division, and it's improved, and you want that diversity. There's just something about this swarm of enemies that's not doing it for me for the most part. And that's why I enjoy Strongholds, because you get to a real boss at the end. There's maybe a few puzzle elements. That's what I want to see more of. And I would also say, can there be like a mini Stronghold even? Like maybe it doesn't have to be a 20-minute super hard thing, but just give me that 10-minute thing that is still like plotted out. Because what happens is there's sort of these open worlds and it feels like what we've seen in a lot of these games, they dropped in stuff versus this very methodically planned out with certain enemy types. So I don't know if I'm making a clear recommendation here. It's not for everybody, but absolutely. I know a lot of people are like, "That is the game is so cool." And that's the feeling that I'm flying around.
Everything you just said, I'm more excited to play.
You're more? Okay.
I'm more excited. Interesting. Yeah. I don't mind that there's not a lot of content for endgame. I don't know if I'll stick around for the endgame. But like the idea of just doing the... You know, I do want a loot game. I do want to get a cool suit of armor and be a shotgunner and run in and get stuff and change my colors and earn gear and do the whole... Ooh, what is that drop? Oh, there's a chest over there. I'm excited to try it out tonight.
Yeah, you proved to me today that this is not for me.
I expected
it wasn't for me because I was in it more for the story stuff. Yeah. And you being like, oh yeah, the beginning and the end are awesome, but the in-between, I'm like, all right, cool. Nah.
And maybe that's one last note I will make is, since you brought it up though, Greg, you earn coins in the game. There's no like, and again, I feel it's lacking there. It's like you don't get a suit of armor that drops. Like if you beat this stronghold, wouldn't it be cool? And we've had this conversation in the world of Destiny. Other places, like I would love to get a suit of armor from that stronghold or something, but you don't. You earn some coins. There's only a few things that you can buy right now.
Well, they said that they, in the stream, in the dev stream this week, they also said that they're going to be doing stronghold specific loot.
They did confirm. That's great.
Yes, they did.
Yeah, and that's like it goes back to what I said. It's vanilla Anthem. I don't think you need to take that as a negative, but you should expect that you
This is the starting point.
This is the starting point, and unfortunately, yes, they've learned some lessons, but they've got a long road of development and listen to the community and lean into the things that we're all looking for. So we'll see. The game's just coming out right now.
I'm sure we're going to be talking about it a lot.
Yes, until the Division gets more
to come. There you go.
Oh, yeah. And it did, you know, I hate to say it, but it has made me more excited for Division. And what I mean by that is I've always been excited for Division, but I kind of do right now. I'm left with the feeling I want. Destiny's pretty quiet right now.
Oh, we got Season of the Drifter, Fran.
Season of the Drifter's coming, but I've played their seasons, and we'll see how much is in there. I'm still excited about it. But, like, meaning I'm really looking forward to having all three, where before I was actually quite worried that it was going to be all Frantham.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think that's okay.
And go home tonight, Fran. Delete all the anthems. Let's play Division 1. Let's get all our shields. Let's get ready for Division 2.
Oh, yeah. Dude, I'm so ready. But I don't know if it's a question that we could talk about on this show or a future one, Tim, but I'd love to talk about the value in a game. Like, Destiny gave me 1,000 hours, Destiny 1, or actually over 2,000. If Anthem only gives you, you know, 30 or 60, is that okay? Because I feel like we're having this conversation as gamers.
Well,
and actually
it's good. I'll make a note here. I don't know when, depending on like game releases.
Yeah, let's talk
I think
about
next
it
week,
after you play more.
We just have a lot of preview stuff going up. So like, but at some point I do want to do that. What's the value of a video game?
Yeah, the time spent, the PPH, man.
Yeah, man.
The PPH.
Oh, man.
But thank you. Yeah, I know that was long-winded.
I'm interested. I can't wait. Man. I'm excited to turn on tonight and see how it actually feels and if it'll click. But I'm totally down for, like, a basic, hey, here's where we're starting from, and run around and play around for 20 hours.
I expected that because I knew going into this, because of the style of this game, it was very different than anything that BioWare has done before. They're working with an engine that they historically have had trouble with. And so I'm kind of glad that they started small to say, hey, let's see how this works, starting with maybe like 30, 40 hours of content, and then we'll build up from there once we get our feet underneath of us. And then, you know, we'll get off to the races. And I don't think that there's anything wrong with that, but I understand people's concerns about costs. And to 100%. That, I would say, then maybe wait 3 months until the first major update is out, until all of these early bug fixes are out the gate, and then you can pick up Anthem, which I would guess is already on a discount for maybe like $30 or $40 like starting in May.
Oh, maybe in the future, And Act 1 releases, by the way, they have multiple acts coming. Act 1 is around March 1st, so there's stuff definitely planned for the future, and I think that's part of what's missing right now, so we'll see.
You can write in to patreon.com/kindoffunnygames if you are a bronze member or above for some listener mail. Got a couple questions today. This is from Taylor from Minnesota. Will we ever see a Portal 3? I love physics-based puzzle games, and in my mind, Portal is the apex. Would love to see another. I'd love to see another, too. I don't think we will.
Really?
Yeah.
In our lifetime, you'll see another Portal 3. I just don't think it'll be soon.
I don't know.
Where's Half-Life 3?
Yeah, I feel like all that stuff is a big question.
I don't think Half-Life 3 is actually ever coming.
Yeah.
Don't we just need Portal VR? They didn't do that yet, did they?
No, and I think Portal 2 was incredibly successful for them. It's one of my top 10 favorite games of all time. I don't see a reason why Portal 3 could not happen. It's not nearly as intensive as what they would have to do with a Half-Life 3. But, I mean, don't forget, we're still waiting for Left 4 Dead 3.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. I don't know that we ever will see it just based on their kind of way of making games or not making games in the last decade.
They said they were getting back to it.
I could see them doing like a Portal VR. I think that's a lot more likely than Portal 3.
Than a full on.
Yeah. And I think that would be a scaled down experience more similar to Portal 1 than Portal 2.
I think it also begs the question of like, where do you take it? You know, it goes Luigi or Yoshi's not maybe the best example because it was designed with a younger demo, but like, what can you do with Portal that makes it more than just bigger than Portal 2?
Not bigger than Portal 2, but a shout out to a game that I'm talking about for a party mode right now. They're doing GDC demos. I hadn't heard of it, but Splitgate Arena Warfare.
Huh.
Do you see this?
No.
IGN called it Halo meets Portal, and it's it's an arena shooter where you're running around, but you're also using portals. Awesome.
Didn't we see this at DICE on the screen? Was it that one or no? Different?
No, not at the awards, no.
Okay.
Yeah, but I watched
what's it called?
It's called Splitgate Arena Warfare.
Is it out yet, you're saying?
Barrett, if you want to throw it up, you can go to 1047games.com. That's 1047games.com.
Wait, is it
it's
out
not
yet?
Out yet. No, okay, I think it's not even early access, but it's out there.
Halo meets
47. 1047.
He's been doing too many taxes over.
And so, it's like, but you're looking, it's very, they say, make no bones about it. They're like, it is an arena shooter with Portal. And like, that's how they make it. Damn, if you want to click that video,
that's how you sell me, man.
Yeah.
So, I'm talking to them about trying to do a party mode for it.
It was when, it's like when Kovac had the quote, Skyrim with guns for Far Cry.
Sure. You want to throw it up so people can see, Bear?
Okay.
Thanks, bud.
Yeah. I'm seeing the Halo vibes.
Right.
A little Unreal.
Overhauled maps, though. What?
This is an update video. This is how we've updated it, but you get into the game to actually see how it works.
Oh, because it's in alpha or whatever.
Exactly. So here's the update in the animation system, but you can see getting in there, jetpacks, shooting around, flying around, using the portals against each other.
Yeah, I see it. You know, it's got a little. Wow. Whoa, it has portals.
Yeah.
So it's got portals. So you know what to me when I see? Yeah, it's Halo, Quake, and Portal. Kind of what I'm seeing.
I mean,
it's very quakey, actually.
Fantastic.
I would say it feels more Quake than Halo.
I don't know. It has the weapon systems look very Halo. Like it looks like it feels like Halo.
But
the design is Halo.
By the way, the guns and the reticles very Halo-esque, like all that. The design. I'm wondering if they're working with anybody that
used to work there. Yeah, because like just the layout.
That looks like the sniper from Halo. But combo of all the above.
Man.
Portal, Quake, Halo.
Real cool.
Interesting. Good tip. I'm going to get on that if I can.
Yeah, it's not fast enough really to be Quake, but then it can't be because it's VR and you would throw up everywhere.
No, I don't want that.
Wait, that's VR?
That's not VR.
I thought you said it was VR.
No.
There's no way.
We got off on it. Okay.
Can you imagine first-person shooter with Portal in VR?
Yeah, I can.
Oh, my
God.
Did you
ever play Echo Arena?
Yeah, is there portals?
There's not portals, no.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. Like, I get kind of sick playing Portal. Imagine VR with the mechanics of first person. Oh my God.
People have evolved in VR. But I would get sick too, Tim. It'd be alive. Literally, someone's dropping like something beneath your feet. And you're like, whoa. Like, that's the gameplay.
Jacob Meyer writes in and says, short and sweet, do we expect Final Fantasy VII Remake will still be released episodically?
We keep talking.
I thought it was an awful idea when they announced it, but episodic releases are even less popular today than when they were then.
That's a great question. I'd say no.
I think it's going to. Yeah. I don't think it's going to be episodic in the way of like five different pieces like that we've thought of. I think the game's probably going to be a trilogy of games.
Yeah, that's what I was gonna. I was actually gonna say. I bet you it'll be two or three, and they
like
kind of
part
gotta
one,
just,
part two, part three.
Yeah,
that they split it up, and they also just sort of see do the other ones ever.
What
come
was the
out?
Last update on this? What was the last update? Like, didn't they say they were going with a different developer?
E3 2017.
The last time we saw the game was at PSX 2016
or 2017.
16.
Wait, they showed it there. I only remember the E3.
It was a trailer.
2015.
No, really?
Yeah.
Did they show 2015?
He's
Year of Dreams.
Yeah, it was the Year of Dreams.
Update.
I'm trying. I feel like there was something like last year.
Right. I feel like they. I thought Square did something. I know they had seen me. I'm saying, did they change developers or something?
Yeah.
Or whatever.
Because it was the CyberConnect, and then it wasn't. Because then they brought it on to be full time Square, and then there's been a whole bunch of
an agonizing no show at E3 2018.
See, I think the fact that they went and they already switched up who's doing it. I think
first time was in 2015.
Yeah.
Wait. So what did Nomura say?
The first and second time were 2015. It debuted at E3. Then we saw gameplay. At, so wait, 2019.
The director said
PSX.
We announced it too early.
I'm well aware of the fact that we announced it too early.
Tetsuya Nomura.
Yeah. But even in the industry, word was beginning to spread that we were working on the game, so we just decided not to keep it a secret and officially reveal it.
Yeah, so, I mean, normally
it's like
that's
Todd Howard talking about Elder Scrolls 6. Like, that game's not coming forever.
So was it 2016 that was shown or 2015?
2015.
Jeez. Well, normally, though, in that situation, so if it's that early, you're 5 or 6 years out. So 2020, 2021 was what
it's a PS5 launch title.
That's, I hope so.
Right? I don't know when it's coming out, but I think that when it comes out, I do think it'll be, will not be one game. Like, I'm pretty confident it will not be one
game. I think it'll
be
split two. They've been experimenting with that a bit, but as risky as it may be, it's very Square, in my opinion.
If
anybody's going to split a game up.
Well, I mean, look at Kingdom Hearts. I mean, that game was in development for over a decade.
Same director. So let's keep that in mind here. Like, there's a lot of issues going on.
See,
with
now
this,
he's free to work on the game.
Yeah. Now he's all good.
It's all set now.
We're not doing DLC. Oh, wait, yeah, we are. Okay. Right. Let's see how this all works. Gerard Jonas brings in a
my name's Gerard
question.
Jonas.
Do you think Sony will ever release another PlayStation All-Stars Battle Royale on next-gen consoles?
No.
It wasn't a huge success on the PS3, but I feel like there are just
too many
PlayStation characters to not try this again.
I don't know why this rumor and this question get kicked up so much. People are always wanting to believe. They want to believe it's happening. It's not going to happen again.
But I think games are in a
it's
downturn
entirely gonna
right
happen,
now.
Man.
With the exception of Smash.
Yes.
Like,
wow.
I just think that their overall magnitude for success is lower than a lot of other genres, and that's just the era that we're in. Doesn't mean that they can't have a resurgence again someday, but if I look at the overall landscape of fighting games and like how many units they've sold in the last decade, it's like clearly not as successful as first person shooters, as action adventures, even as maybe even as racing games. I mean,
so
I have to look up specific numbers.
It's going
to
happen as a kart racer. I really truly believe it. There's going to be something branded
game.
PlayStation All-Stars.
Okay, I'll buy that. But
I just feel like they finally have a roster of characters that people care about over a long enough period of time that back when this game came out, it was just like, you really going to launch this game without Cloud, without Crash Bandicoot, without anyone relevant really besides Nathan Drake?
Wait, did Sony never release a kart racer with multiple...
My Nation Racers, they did it, but it wasn't like a car racer.
Yeah, they were like Avatar-esque or something. Yeah. I am surprised it's never happened, but that's a different game. But I see. That's a little, that's a gotcha there, Tim.
It is a gotcha,
they're
but you know what?
They're not going to come up with a
schemer. Tim's
a
schemer. Did you know
that?
I'm
going to
do it.
Schemer.
I bet you, Frank.
It's not a Smash Brothers fighter competitor in the same world.
Although
this
the same
is why
time,
your bets get all messed up.
But it's like, no, I'm pretty clear about what I'm saying here. even with the Smash-type game, like, I don't think we'll see it again, but I wouldn't be surprised if we did, because although the fighting game thing is true, it's like party games are different, and like Smash Bros, I feel falls into both of those categories.
Totally, yeah.
And like, I think that sells mainly on its character and IP appeal. Like that's why
Smash
what gets
is
into
successful
the
because it's a Nintendo exclusive.
And I feel like if PlayStation did it, like they could have that again.
I don't know. PlayStation's characters aren't as charming and memorable as Nintendo's.
But they are now.
No, they're
Spider-Man.
Not. No, but like Spider-Man's a licensed deal,
they'll
right?
Figure it out. It's a different Sony now. Like, it's not the Sony that put this
they'll
game out.
Figure it
so
out.
What are you at? Yeah, what do you think changed? You think it's Spider-Man, Aloy?
Mm-hmm.
You're saying Crash, because Crash is available now. Cloud.
Yeah, uh-huh. They'll get Cloud.
Sure, but
they'll
it's kart racing.
Solid
I buy
Snake.
That. Sure.
But even kart racing or fighting game. Like
fighting everything,
or they double down on the battle royale and they make it a battle
a fucking
royale.
Well, that, they don't have 100 characters.
That's what I've been thinking about.
They can go deep in the bench. They don't
could.
You worry. They
just could.
50 of the characters are Patapons. And then
what was the cat's name? Tomo.
Oh, Tora.
Tora. No, yeah. 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 He was my main.
Can we get Parappa in there? It'd be Parappa. Great.
Yeah. Parappa was in the first one too. Let's do one more. I'm going to go with this one here. This comes from Jacob Meyer. He says, why did Nintendo ruin Wario? Let's just get the truth out there. Wario is a character who's been trashed since Mario 64. He wasn't even in Mario 64.
Yeah, I was like, wait, what?
He's in Mario 64 DS, if that's what you're talking about. A once proud villain of Mario has been turned into nothing but comedy relief with a stupid new outfit. I remember after playing Super Mario Sunshine, I thought to myself, why wasn't the villain secretly Wario? That would have been pretty cool. But I digress. My question to y'all is, why did Nintendo ruin Wario, and how would you fix it?
When was he at his pinnacle?
Yeah, when was he great? WarioWare?
Yeah.
Wario's pinnacle was probably WarioWare.
Yeah, but that wasn't even him.
If he never came back, I would not shed a tear.
Yeah, well.
He's, I mean, I don't have a problem with Wario. I like that he's in the roster, but like, characters like him are more like a Mario Tennis thing and a mm-hmm. Mario Party thing. Like, I don't know that they have like
he's
a
amazing.
Place to shine. I like, I mean, I disagree.
He does.
That's right. Actually, in Smash Brothers, awesome.
Mike Pereira loved him.
Mike Pereira loved him, man. But I disagree. Like, I wouldn't want him as the villain. Like,
well, he was an amazing villain in Super Mario Land 2, Six Golden Coins, his debut.
That was the actual debut?
Yeah, first Wario appearance ever. He was fantastic in that. But yeah, like, they made the Wario World game on GameCube. Like, that happened.
Oh, yeah.
There was a Wario World game. There was a 3D... Wario running around and doing stuff.
Wow,
and
man.
It wasn't good.
Hey, it's Wario and he's running around and doing stuff.
It was like it was more Banjo feeling than Mario feeling. I didn't like it at all. And then they did the Wario Land Smooth Moves.
On, I remember the name. I don't remember the game.
Wait, no, that's not right. Smooth Moves is WarioWare. Shake It. Wario Land Shake It, which was an eShop exclusive on the Wii, and it was beautiful.
Huh.
Pull this up, Barrett.
Again, I don't have a problem with Wario. I just like...
Wario Land Shake It.
I think you're it's just
you don't have a problem with him, but you don't have a soft spot for him. He's just something that happens.
I think you're
That's why, I mean, like, yeah. Waluigi is beloved.
Yeah. Pull this up.
Like, I feel like, Tim, you're approving. He has had some good stuff out there. And
yeah.
Give him some time. Mm-hmm. Is this the last one you think? Like, 2013?
This was, I'd say, the last good Wario.
Oh, this is great. Yeah.
But yeah, this
is
awesome.
This is a great use of Wario.
And it was, like, puzzle-based 2D platforming. Yeah. And yeah, it's like...
Cell-shaded style, side-scrolling.
This is how we all want Mario to look now. But, like, modern.
It's how we all want.
I guess so.
You wouldn't love a Mario game that actually looks like the Mario art.
No,
in 2D
I would love it. I just
instead of
saying...
this new Super Mario Bros. Bullshit we've been getting
okay,
shoved down our throats.
Jesus.
Yeah. This is cool. Yeah, very hand drawn.
Yeah, so dope.
Yeah, it looks like a cartoon.
It's great.
It's cool.
Ladies and gentlemen, like this has been the Kind of Funny Games cast. Thank you very much for joining us. We're about to get into the post show, which is exclusive to patreon.com/kindafunnygames. Members at the silver level or above, thank you very much for joining us. Until next week, I love you.